Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mary Hartigan, Dave Lundy, Dan Proff, and Christine Svensson. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment or question, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, if you want to watch or listen to this program, we are on the World Wide Web at beyondthebeltway.com, beyondthebeltway.com. Well, if you watch the Sunday morning shows today, there was a lot of discussion of the debates. The Republican candidates are getting together in Washington to find out what they can change about those dates with 92 days to go before Iowa and 372 days to go before the general election. And again, as the Republicans try to figure out a way to maybe get more coverage out of their next debate, I don't know how they're going to get more coverage out of their next debate, because the debate, we're still debating the debate from the last time. And I think they're probably picking up Republican primary voters with each of those debate points. But again, one of the things that came out today is that Jeb Bush, who everyone agrees, I think virtually everyone agrees, including Jeb Bush, he did not have a good debate night last week. He is going to once again restart his campaign with a speech tomorrow in Tampa, Florida. And again, I'm going to talk more about his appearance on Meet the Press this week or today, but I want to get Christine Svensson. Christine, is this a restart that can work, and do you still think there's a road and an opportunity for Jeb Bush to get back in this race?
No, there's no path to the nomination for Jeb Bush. It doesn't matter that his super PAC is loaded. It'll keep him around for a long time, and I'll talk about that later with the brokered convention possibility, but he doesn't have any path to victory in the first four states, and he's losing momentum every single day.
Let me ask Dan Proff, our other card-carrying Republican talk show host for 560 AM in Chicago, your comment about Bush. Does he going to make a comeback?
No, I don't think so. I think that the race is down to four. I really do at this point. I think it's Cruz and Rubio, and it's Trump and Carson. And it's kind of a surprising thing to say, because I would have said four different names just even 4 or 5 months ago. But that's where I think it's at. I just think you can only kind of restart and reintroduce yourself so many times when you're relatively a known quantity like Jeb is among the Republican primary electorate.
Dave Lundy, did you see anything the other night that would indicate that there is some life and a road to a comeback for Jeb Bush?
He's got cooler things to do, Bruce.
Yes,
and
he does. Yes.
He's made that crystal clear. I want to start the show with a rare and perhaps the only moment of agreement that Dan Proft and I will have. I think he's exactly right about the four candidates who are viable at this point in the nominating process. Bush is done, and last time I was on the show, I said it was premature to vote Bush off the island. I no longer think it is premature. I think that my only question is, can he stick around for a long time? Does he have enough money in his own account as opposed to his super PAC? Because as we saw with Rick Perry's super PAC had a lot of money left over, but his campaign was done.
Mary, I want to get your response. You're our other Democrat tonight. Are you gleefully...
Oh, I'm not gleeful about where
you want
Bush
him to
is.
Stick around?
I do want him to stick around. He's probably one of the few serious people who are available. And I want what's best for my country. And if somebody who's a Republican is going to get elected, we want somebody who actually can do the job. I think once that Carson gets more exposure and as being asked more questions, that he'll drop off. And I think that Ted Cruz is so difficult to get along
but again,
with.
Think,
that I don't
bottom
think
line,
that
you
he'll
think,
have.
You think Bush? You'd like to see Bush
stick
around?
I would.
Well, as part of this effort, again, he's going to have the rollout again, relaunch tomorrow in Tampa. But he was on Meet the Press today with Chuck Todd, and some of the things he had to say were somewhat interesting. First of all, about his debate performance, he said, "I didn't watch the debate. He did not sit down to watch the debate to find out whether he could do better in the future." He said, "I'm not going to prey on people's fears or their anger. The only way we can win a general election is to draw people towards our cause." He was talking about his father. He went on to say, "For my dad, I would kill. I would go to prison for him." And then he said, and this was one of the most startling things I heard him say, this is about a 120-page memo his staff has leaked to the media, just, you know, a real hatchet job on Marco Rubio. He said, I didn't see it and read about it in the media. Then he went on to say that his father is fired up again about Donald Trump, and he's very engaged. And again, he went on to say that when asked about the death penalty, he said, I'm conflicted on it. It's a tough decision because of the sense of closure to some victims' families. That, of course, is opposite. Hillary Clinton came out in support of the death penalty this past week. And then he said that he has a heart. He wants to be remembered as a guy who has a heart and is a heart, or has a heart. So any of those quotes, again, everyone agrees that those quotes are not going to do anything for him. And would you agree with my comment about how does a campaign, they didn't release the campaign. It was leaked.
The blueprint memo. The Bush blueprint.
Yeah. I mean, how does that,
It strains credulity that he would have any idea that that was going on.
120 pages and he didn't see it.
Right.
Does
I don't
anybody
believe
that?
Well, but first of all, that's kind of secondary. That's a sort of an inside the baseball thing. Oh, it's got some delineation of Marco Rubio's weaknesses. Every campaign does that.
Right.
Every campaign's good. And some of the weaknesses, at least that were reported, are substantive issues. There's no problem with that. That's kind of really ancillary. That's something for the Washington Press Corps to obsess about. The muddled mess of quotes you just read is the problem for Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, I'm not a conservative like some who just dismiss Jeb Bush. He's just a rhino and that's all we have to say about it. Jeb Bush was an excellent conservative reform governor of Florida, but that was 10 years ago. And I don't know what's happened in the intervening 10 years, and I don't know what kind of debater or public presence Jeb Bush was in Florida because I didn't live there when he was running for governor the two times that he was successful. But the Jeb Bush that is a national candidate right now is a mess. He doesn't know who he wants to be, what he wants to present. He spends some time defending his family while he's trying to also separate himself from his family and be his own man. There's no defining issue. And he says things, and this is the real problem with Jeb Bush, especially with the base. He says things like, I'm not going to prey on people's fears. The candidates are not preying on people's fears that he's referring to. They're trying to speak to their very legitimate frustrations. Some do it more effectively than others. Some do it in a way that I don't like Donald Trump, and others do it in a more substantive way. But Jeb Bush's dismissal of the frustrations that the base has with the Republican Party and with where our nation is going is the reason he's marginalized himself.
Would you agree? Totally out of sync with this.
I really hate to say this.
It's twice in one segment.
Exactly.
Get Lundy. I mean, Lundy, we don't need Lundy. You're just going to agree with me all night.
Now, I got to tell you, I am amazed at how bad of a candidate Jeb is.
Yeah.
And it's right from the get-go when he couldn't answer the question about Iraq. When he couldn't answer the question, was the Iraq war a mistake? And everybody was like, couldn't you see this coming from a mile away? Everybody knew this question was going to be your first question. And so you thought it was one thing, but it kept going and going and going. He's terrible.
One of the other things he said was that I'm a candidate that could put a complete sentence together. That was sort of a slap at his brother as well. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to play one clip from Jeb Bush to close that discussion off, and then we'll move to some other subjects. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border, and now around the world on the World Wide Web. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
So
John Hunter.
Bruce Dumont, thanks very much for joining us tonight. One last point about Jeb Bush. He was interviewed by Chuck Todd on Meet the Press today, and he was describing what kind of a candidate he isn't. Let's take a listen.
Also, I'm not a grievance candidate. I'm a candidate that believes we're on the verge of greatness, but it's going to require the leadership skills to fix things. And that's my message. It's how I started my campaign in Kendall, where you grew up. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm going to do tomorrow in a speech in Tampa. And that's going to be the basis of my campaign, for sure.
Do you understand why?
I'm not a grievance candidate. Isn't that what this Republican primary is all about at the moment? Defining grievance?
I think there's some of that.
Trump.
I think there's some of that. But also, I mean, you know, Jeb needs to take a look at Trump's campaign paraphernalia, Make America Great Again. I mean, Trump's kind of ordered according to the market on that aphorism. So Jeb needs to come up with something more and more specific. It's just kind of all this half-hearted, you know, I'm an idea guy. He's describing what he isn't, right? Instead of telling me what you are, demonstrate what you are. And right. He hasn't done that in this campaign. And it seems to me he's a guy groping in the dark for a candidacy, a rationale for his candidacy.
He's also a little bit, I think, very much like Kasich, is they're talking about their records as governor, again, what they did in the past. They're not focusing on the future in any way.
Right.
You made a comment about Ben Carson, that he needs more airtime. He did get more airtime today. He was on with Martha Raddatz on ABC, and he had some interesting things to say. You know, if you're a regular listener to this program, I've not been a fan of Ben Carson. I don't think he's going to make it to the White House. I don't think he's going to be the Republican nominee. But I will say that I thought his appearance today was probably the most impressive appearance that I've seen him on television. And part of it was he got into a discussion of foreign policy as it relates to Syria. Let's take a look.
I think that's a move in the right direction because we clearly need to have those special ops in lots of different areas, but certainly in terms of helping to guide what the Air Force is doing. I think it's a good idea. I actually agree with that. But I think that that's only a small part of it. We need to have a much bigger plan when it comes to battling, you know, the global jihadists, because they have big ideals.
What's about your much
what
bigger plan for Syria?
Way of life.
Let's do this specifics right here. What's your much bigger plan for Syria?
Well, my much bigger plan involves, you know, Putin and Iran also. I mean, those are the forces that are propping up the Assad regime.
Dan Proft, what has been your opinion of Carson so far? You put him in your final four. What is his appeal? Who is he appealing to?
Well, I mean, I think he has, to some extent, the same appeal that Trump has, that Carly Fiorina has, that Ted Cruz has, who's the most iconoclastic of the elected office holders. And that is, he is somebody that is completely separate and distinct from the Washington political ruling class. He is someone who also is very comfortable in his own skin, so he is authentic. There's not positioning and posturing with Ben Carson. There is who he is and what he thinks in real time. And that's kind of, and to some extent, I would say he's kind of the thinking man's Trump. I think Ted Cruz is occupying that space too. So to the extent Trump falters, I think Cruz is the main beneficiary. But so remember, you have, and just after the second debate, you had Fiorina, Cruz, Carson and Trump representing almost 70% of the Republican primary electorate at that time. So there is a lot of upside opportunity to be that outsider candidate who is giving voice to frustration. Carson does it in a more reasonable room temperature way than Trump does, and that has appeal. And frankly, here's something smart politically he did, because he's supposed to be this novice. He built a ground game in Iowa early. I talked to a former Iowa State Republican Party chairman back 3 months ago, and he said, watch out for Ben Carson. He's one of the few people that's got a coordinator in every county in Iowa. He's running a ground game. You're going to see him pop. And that's exactly what's happened.
The other night of the debate, when you looked at that field as Democrats, were you worried when you saw and heard Marco Rubio?
I wasn't worried when I saw Marco Rubio. I mean, I've been saying for a while that I thought Rubio, of the remaining candidates, had the best chance to win the nomination. I still do think
because
that.
Because of why?
Because he's, to quote Joe Biden, he's articulate, he's clean. Hey, man, this guy's the whole package.
Exactly.
You want to be quoting Joe Biden? Yeah. Okay.
No, I mean, he's really, look, Marco Rubio is I mean, Bush may have said this in a pejorative way. Marco Rubio is the Republicans' Obama this year. And, you know, he is extremely well-spoken. He knows his issues. He knows his stuff. I think he's a lightweight. Same thing was said about Obama in 2007 and 2008. I think he's a little more polished than Obama was at this stage in the campaign. So did he scare me? Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting candidate. He's the only person I could possibly see in of the remaining four actually winning the nomination.
All right. Mary, your reaction of Rubio, and do you see him as maybe one of the toughest people for Hillary Clinton to beat?
Well, I think that with the divided nature of our country, that whoever is the Republican nominee is going to be a hard person to beat. I think that Rubio is certainly one of the leading contenders. But the whole thing makes me really sad because I can't see on their positions, what they're talking about, their view of America as it is now and their view of America in the future. I just don't see greatness.
What is it about Marco Rubio's view of the future that you disagree with?
Well, for one thing, I disagree with his immigration stance.
Which one?
Yeah.
Both of them.
Right.
Both of them. And I don't think, I think it's complete, and his current one is completely unrealistic.
Who has a realistic plan at the moment?
Oh, the Democrats. Hillary Clinton has one.
And what is her plan?
Her plan is to regularize the people who are here through a long period where you have to go through checks and also pay taxes and pay
a position in this country at this moment. You're ready to take that to the polls.
I do.
Christine, do you agree with that?
That's the best plan? What do I agree with? What?
Do you agree that that's a good plan? Do you agree that Rubio is unique and his position on immigration, as Dan has said, it's an evolving, changing position? And did he make mistakes years ago that he's regretting right now, or would he be light years ahead in this campaign?
No,
had he not backed away from his position?
He has changed his
position. Or stuck by his position.
Or his
either
position
one.
On immigration. I'm actually not entirely sure how much it's changed, and so maybe Dan could speak to that instead. But no, I don't agree with Hillary's solution. I don't agree with amnesty and giving people citizenship.
But Rubio signed off on that position back when it was the got 69 votes in the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm. No, he did. I mean, that's one
and
of
it's
the
problems. And it's
that's
a
one
very
of the
long.
He has.
It isn't.
Right.
It isn't. Doesn't remotely resemble what the Reagan amnesty program. It doesn't remotely resemble anything like that. And the
it's a
time
political time.
And the time that you have to go through. And really, you really want to stop illegal immigration. Make sure that people have to that the OSHA. Requirements are enforced at every workplace, and make sure that illegal people have to have it.
Republicans have been talking about e-verify for a decade.
Right.
I mean, they don't
want to put it into place because they want to be able to
well,
get
US,
free
the,
labor.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce may not want to put it in place, but a lot of conservative grassroots and entrepreneurial capitalists, they certainly do.
Paul Ryan doesn't want to put it in place.
Well, I understand there are some disagreements within the party, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any orthodoxy that has to be hewed here. But I would say about Hillary's position, where Obama's executive amnesty isn't far enough, if you think that's a majority position, then you haven't been looking at public opinion polls lately. That's not an issue that Democrats are going to win. And it's not an issue that's going to help them do what they need to do, which is turn out the minority vote the way it came out for Barack Obama.
By the way, I want to mention that the last couple of weeks, I have made my list and shared with you who I thought could be elected president of the United States. And last week, I got a couple of emails after the broadcast and said, Bruce, you're only mentioning the Republicans that you think can be elected president of the United States. So I'm going to change my graphic for those watching us on television tonight and say, I will say again, here are the three people who I think can be elected president of the United States: Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and yes, Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump can go all the way. Those are the only three that I think can make it all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And you disagree. You still don't buy that Trump could pull it off.
No way. No way. Absolutely not.
I'm with Dave. No way. The whole House of Cards is going to come crashing down.
Okay, well, you've heard that before. Dan?
And it's crashing down
crazy?
Now.
You're not
am
crazy.
Am I crazy?
I've spent the better part of the last 4 months referring to Donald Trump as a witless ape. So I am
on your morning show.
All right. So this is not a Trump fan, and I haven't been a Trump fan since I read Art of the Deal 25 years ago. I thought he was a huckster then.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is not coming from a Trump fan, but I've been wrong about
me
Trump.
Me neither.
I thought he was going to be gone by Labor Day.
Me too.
And let me tell you something. The possibility of Trump winning the nomination and subsequently winning the presidency, because of, frankly, what you said before, that any Republican is going to have a very good shot this year, especially with President Obama's approval ratings around 45%. Can Donald Trump win the presidency of the United States? Right now, he absolutely could.
Mary, you absolutely do not believe that.
No.
But my question is, why don't you believe that? Do you believe it because you don't hang around with people that may disagree with you?
No, actually, somebody that I know and whose opinion I
respect.
Went to the town hall or the fundraiser that Donald Trump had here in Chicago about 3 months ago and was just raving about how impressed he was and that this guy was really running. So yes, I do, because I think
I have that same anecdote to share with people who in a million years I would have
never thought
would have said they would support Donald Trump.
But
that's
when,
part of my evolution when, over the last several weeks or months on this program.
When people start to learn how he conducts himself in his business and his bankruptcies,
bankruptcies. He came into this
back
race
shortly from
celebrity.
Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. From Houston, Texas to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, and we will now introduce our guests or have them do the same, and we begin with Dave Lundy. Dave?
I'm Dave Lundy, president of Aileron Communications. We are a PR and public affairs strategy firm focusing on innovation clients.
Any children?
I have two children, Eli and Max.
Christine Svensson, you're a lawyer.
I am indeed.
What kind of law do you practice?
I practice employment, family, and election law and have been for 20 years here in town.
And you're a Republican lawyer.
Indeed.
And our other guest, Mary Hardigan, is a Democratic lawyer. What kind of law do you practice, Mary?
I am, but I represent small and medium-sized businesses and help with contract and insurance problems.
Dan Proft. I don't know you.
I'm a morning drive radio talk show host here in Chicago on AM 560, Chicago's Morning Answer, from 5 to 9 a.m. Chicago time.
And you ran for governor a couple of years ago.
I did, a fateful run in 2010.
Right. Yes. Impressed a lot of people. And one of the longtime members of our panel here, and so we wish you well with your...
Bruce discovered me, so you get to take full credit / blame.
Well, you know, yes. it was interesting because I've mentioned to those who are listening is that obviously we keep these programs. They're available at beyondthebeltway.com. And the other day I was going through some really old tapes, and I ran across the tape when right after you got your job at your old station,
yeah.
When that was going to happen, and that was one of the ones I just inadvertently was listening to. So let's go back to calls, or not go back to calls. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Carlos, listening to us in Houston, Texas tonight on Sirius XM satellite. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi guys, I was just calling because all week I keep hearing about this Marco Rubio character. In my opinion, he's a lightweight. I think Hillary needs to fear Trump. She also needs to fear Ted Cruz. I think a Trump-Cruz ticket would probably be the most powerful. The debates, I don't like the debates because the RNC and the media are working together to make the rhinos look good and to kill off the conservatives. But us conservatives are not going for it. We're going to stick with Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Carson. We're not going to vote. I'm not voting for Rubio, okay? I am definitely not going to vote for Rubio. So if the GOP puts up another rhino, yes, Hillary could win. She could win if a rhino runs against her.
I want to ask Dan Proft, because he is, again, very outspoken. Would you put Rubio in the rhino category?
No. No, I don't think he's a rhino. And by the way, I don't like getting into the business of excommunicating people from the Republican Party. That's just not what I do, even if I disagree with them. Even if I disagree with them routinely and vociferously, like, for example, our junior senator here in Illinois, Mark Kirk. Let's not forget, Marco Rubio, how was he elected to the Senate in Florida? Tea Party candidate. He was a Tea Party candidate backed by the Tea Party, profiled on the cover of National Review as one of the up-and-coming stars in the party when he was running against Charlie Crist, who turned out to be the real rhino because he was a Democrat.
But he switched over, yeah.
I understand Rubio's transgression in the minds of a lot of conservatives on the Gang of Eight and on immigration, the amnesty bill. And there's reason to disagree with that. But I don't think it's the grounds to excommunicate him for the party or to say if he's the nominee, you don't vote for him.
Can I ask your caller a question?
Yes, go ahead, Dave.
I'm curious, Carlos, you said that that Rubio is a rhino, but Donald Trump is a conservative. And I'm just wondering how you reconcile that with all of his past positions in support of Democrats, in favor of pro-choice, in a whole host
single
of issues.
Payer, right?
Single payer health care, which he still
Very
talks
simple.
About.
Go ahead,
I'm just wondering.
Very simple. First of all, Rubio was never a Tea Party candidate. The Tea Party in Florida will tell you that themselves. He jumped on the bandwagon to get the Senate. But besides that, you asked a question about Trump. Trump is a businessman first in New York City. That's my hometown originally. And if you're going to do business in New York, Chicago, in those liberal places, you better put the front that you are a liberal, especially if you're a conservative. Now, everybody that understands that little sidebar understands where Donald Trump is coming from, and he is a conservative, and he proves it every single day.
And you think a ticket of Trump Trump and Cruz would be elected, go all the way?
Absolutely, you will see the conservatives running.
You will. You are absolutely right. You will see conservatives running to the polls, running to Canada, and the liberals, all the liberals and the Democrats will be doing, will be running to the polls. That's all they will be doing.
You know what the liberals will be doing? This is how Trump is going to get
okay.
Mexico to build the wall.
Okay.
The millions of liberals are going to be running down to Mexico to escape the Trump presidency, and
okay.
Mexico will be forced to build the wall.
Maybe they'll build it on the way out. Listen, thanks for your call. Let's move
Take
to
care.
Sam in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, one of the big primaries coming up. Do you have a candidate in that primary, Sam, before you ask your question? Is somebody you're for tonight?
No, I just wanted to comment on the Trump and Rubio situation.
Okay, go ahead.
I agree with Carlos. Recent poll showed that 70% of Republican voters believe Trump is the most electable person in the field. Now, I know that Rubio gets support. He's going to get support from Bush and Kasich, and the establishment money is going to coalesce behind him. And that's what the last debate was between Bush and Rubio. They were slugging it out.
Yep.
For people like Paul Singer, who just decided to back the hedge fund guy.
A billionaire just jumped on the Rubio bandwagon. That's
right.
A big win from that debate last week.
And that's why they were slugging it out. But
right.
People still need to remember that Donald Trump is the only person there who is not going to be beholden to special interests. For me, I agree with Carlos. If it's Rubio, I don't think it's going to be Rubio, but if it is, I'm not going to vote. I just refuse to, and I'm a lifelong GOP voter.
Sam, but I asked you, Sam, I asked you at the beginning of the call whether you had a candidate. It sounds like, to me, you have a candidate, that candidate is Donald Trump, which is okay.
Yeah, no, I'm a Trump guy all the way.
Okay, all right. Then you didn't say that when I asked that question.
I misunderstood you.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
Well, something that
three issues, though. Jobs and the economy, immigration, corruption in Washington, D.C., where we're being stolen blind from, and our children's futures, And Trump is a guy to me on every one of those. And I would love to see Trump included.
All right, now, I want you to stay on the line, okay? You are a Republican from South Carolina. I want you to talk to a liberal, one of the most liberal guests we have on this program, a liberal lawyer from Chicago. Now, I want the two of you to talk. I want you, Mary, to explain to Sam why he is all off base and that Donald Trump may be the worst thing for the country.
Well, on the corruption issue, really, that's a serious problem. If you look at the contracts that he's had in the past and all of the money that he's taken from state and federal governments for his projects, he doesn't do a good job with the accounting. He's regularly sued. Right now, he is in the process of paying a judgment for defrauding people who are looking for an education. He ran something called Trump University, which had no Trump in it because he never showed up to any of the classes or anything, and had no university in it because
right,
it didn't give an
education. Stop for a second. Sam, I want you respond to that about that Donald Trump's business dealings have been less than above board based on Mary's assessment of those records. Does she have any truth to that?
I don't have all the details there, Bruce, but what's going on is much bigger than that. When you have almost $4 trillion budgets and this being divvied up in the back room by a few Washington, D.C. hacks and their cronies, and the American taxpayers' money is being taken, and then you've got people like Hillary Clinton, you talk about Trump, I don't think Trump, there's any question about whether he helped our enemies get uranium, such as could be said about Hillary Clinton. I think that's one of the big scandals of the Clinton Foundation that hasn't come out yet. We don't need the same old business in Washington, D.C.
All right. Sam, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. 1-800-723-8290. I almost gave my personal cell phone out.
So I can call you after the show.
That'll be 24 hours a day, nonstop. Dave Lundy, you wanted to make a point when we were talking earlier about the debates. You said that the Republicans have whined too much about the MSNBC or the CNBC debate. And you were going to take exception to what some conservatives believe, and I believe it was Ted Cruz who said that Hillary Clinton in her debate had, or the Democrats were treated in a far different way. Trump said the same thing.
Well, it wasn't just Ted Cruz. It was every
Trump,
Republican. Yeah. You guys probably have said
except
the same
Kasich,
thing.
Except John Kasich, who liked the CNBC
right.
debate.
Another reason why
nail in his coffin.
There is this culture of Republican victimization when it comes to the press. And unfortunately, John Harwood fed that.
Absolutely.
A couple of his questions were idiotic. No question about it. Are you a comic book character? No, I'm not a comic book character. The opening question, which we all agree, you know, what's your biggest weakness? That's like, what color, what kind of tree do you consider yourself? That having been said, I would argue that while those questions were over the top, most of the questions were pretty much right up the middle. They called candidates out when they did things that were not true. And Republicans claim that the Democrats' debate was gentle and easy and just were all a bunch of softballs. So let me ask you, if these are softballs, some people, this is Hillary Clinton, the first question of the debate, even some Democrats believe you change your positions based on political expediency. And then he goes through some things where she changed her positions.
Anderson Cooper.
Will you say anything to get elected? And then when she answers the question, Cooper follows up, Secretary Clinton, with all due respect, the question is about expediency. Do you change your political identity based on who you're talking to? And on and on and on. And there's question after question.
All right, now. And
I just, this is just, I know, Dan, you talk about this on your show, and everybody loves to beat up on these guys. I just didn't think it was that bad.
Well, I thought Lincoln Chafee was treated terribly by Anderson Cooper.
Fun of the race.
Fun of the race. He was my candidate for the nomination. Bye-bye forever, America. Here's the thing. I don't complain about the liberal bent of the Washington Press Corps because it's built in. We know from polling data, 83 to 92% of Washington Press Corps members vote for the Democrat nominee for president. They have for 40 years. But it's just good politics for Republican candidates to beat up on the press. So it's smart
exactly.
politics.
Back Charlie from Chicago with more.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, But you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Come on back. And we are going to go to Mark, listening to us in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on POTUS. We have not had a caller from the great state of Oklahoma for a long time. So, Mark, it's nice to have you with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my phone call. I just had a comment in response to the South Carolinian about Trump and campaign finance. I just feel like, you know, Trump's answer to campaign finance is to elect really wealthy people who can't be influenced by money and politics, but I don't think I want 535 federal elected officials and a president who are just wealthy. I want campaign finance reform. And I think that's your answer. It's not just electing someone who's so wealthy that they can't be influenced. It's a matter of fixing it moving forward.
Would you also acknowledge that in this particular case, now granted, Donald Trump is a billionaire, but even more so than being rich, he's famous. And I think it's his celebrityhood that has thrust him into the position that he is. Because Jeb Bush has raised more money than anyone else, and his message is going nowhere. John Connally, you know, 25, 30 years ago, raised the most money. He went nowhere. So it isn't necessarily the person who has the most money that gets the furthest down the road, because you do have the ability to make your case. I thought the other point you were going to make was the other evening when Donald Trump said that he wanted to outlaw PACs. He doesn't like the idea of PACs. Super PACs.
Right.
And also the fact that he's funding his own campaign. I like I think part of his appeal is that he's funding his own campaign, that he isn't going to be beholden to anybody, which, frankly, I think can scare an awful lot of people that he's not beholden to them.
Well,
you know, I agree with that, but I think when you look at Jeb Bush, he has the opportunity to stick around because of the money, not because he has a lot of fan base, but because the money's there. And I think you're going to have to kind of bifurcate this between presidential politics and our Congress members, because the amount of money influencing their decisions, that's how you get private prisons that are for-profit and things like are directly adverse to the public's interest.
Right. Yeah, I think that the one area where Trump is saying things that resonate on both sides of the aisle is when he talks about campaign finance and he talks about super PACs and he talks about,
U.S. policy messing up the Middle East.
I completely agree with Trump when he's gone off on this issue. It's an issue that is ignored by everybody else, except for the one Democrat who can't get on the stage, Professor
Larry Lessig.
Professor Lessig. But I think that Trump is onto something. I just don't think it's going to go anywhere, not in this Congress.
Yeah, I don't agree. And super PACs have been around for a lot longer than, I mean, everyone thinks it's this new phenomenon with Citizens United. Super PACs have been around since, I think, BICRA or whenever it was in the 70s when they did the Watergate reforms. But, no, that's not the problem. The campaign finance thing, I don't see Republicans as on his side with that.
No, they're not.
Oh, okay. You're saying bipartisan.
There are people in both parties who are very. This issue resonates a great deal. I happen to be one of
it's
them.
It's inside the baseball. It's an inside baseball issue. People don't care where your money comes from.
Yeah, right. The general
and you know, nor should they. Here, the Institute for Justice, which is a public interest law firm in D.C., has a great aphorism on this. There's not too much money in politics. There's too much government for sale. If you want to remove the money from politics, then don't have a $4 trillion piggy bank.
Let's go to Matthew in Monterey, California, listening to us on KION. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Great. Nice to hear from you.
The one thing I wanted to ask the panel is I thought Chris Christie had a pretty darn good debate, and I think he's got a lot of substance on the issues. Why is he fading? He seemed like a great candidate a couple of years ago. He's got great positions on terrorism. There's a lot that he's done, shows great leadership skills. I've seen his town halls. I mean, it seems like he's got all the matrixes. But why is he fading? I don't understand.
So the simple answer is that, you know, had it not been for Bridgegate, you know, he would have been able to get call all those Bush donors, and that he would be in the position the Bush is in had that not all happened. Who knows if that's really true?
I think there's more to it than that. I think you go back to 2012 where he embraced
the
literally Barack Obama. I think he was spending most of his time as a surrogate for Mitt Romney, promoting himself, including at his keynote address at the convention, which was bizarre. Yes. It was all about Chris Christie's alleged record as governor. I also think his alleged record, his record as governor, is not quite as good as he makes it out to be. Now, to his defense, he also has a Democrat-controlled state legislature to deal with, so it's not like Indiana or Wisconsin. So that makes it a little bit different to do things like pension reform. But I think at the end of the day, Christie has a mannerism problem for outside of New Jersey. And I think his record just hasn't worn well over the last several years, even though he won a landslide reelection victory in Jersey.
Also, by the way, we should add there's this name called Donald Trump. There's this brash, tough-talking New York media market guy who really upstaged not only Chris Christie but a lot of other people. And also, I'm going to say something, and again, I'm in a position where I can say it. I think he's too fat. And I'm fat. I will tell you that. I don't think people take people who are that overweight seriously to lead the country. I really don't. And people don't want to talk about it, and he makes jokes about it, and all the late-night comedians talk about it. But I just don't think that he's serious and would be taken seriously for that.
Not in the media age.
Not in the media age. No, he's not.
Maybe whereas, if he wore like a three-piece suit with a watch fob.
It would have to be.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, he in the William Howard Taft era, he would.
He
do
weighs
well.
Less than Taft.
He would do well. Well, that's good. That could be on his bumper sticker. I weigh less than Taft. That's it.
Thanks to
Laugh.
Right. Yes.
Right. But listen, Matthew, thank you very much for your call. Always nice to hear from California. 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number from coast to coast and border to border around the world. If you want to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @DUMO. And again, we're giving all this information out to those listening on radio from coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations, including SiriusXM POTUS 124. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. And if you're watching us on the World Wide Web, stay right where you are. Another full hour of Beyond the Beltway coming your way live from Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, coming to you from Chicago with our guests this evening, Mary Hartigan, Dave Lundy, Dan Propft, and Christine Svensson, and our phone lines remaining open at 1-800-723-8289. And if you have a comment or an email for me, it's BruceDumont at museum.tv. And if you want to send me a tweet, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. Dan Propft, I want to go back to something you said in the first hour for those who have just tuned in. You were listing the four Republicans that you think are still most viable, most likely to be fighting it out for the nomination. Put those names on the record one more time.
Cruz, Rubio, Carson, and Trump.
All right. Tell us how you think that evolves. Give me your scenario in the first couple of primary states and who does well and what's the scenario for survival of each of those four?
Well, boy, I think Cruz needs to do well in Iowa, and I think he's poised to do that. In terms of what's the scenario for each one of them, look, I'm getting out of the business of political prognostication because of Donald Trump in this election. but here's one thing I will tell you, because I know a lot of the conversation and a previous caller pointed this out. 70% of Republicans think Trump is our best chance to win. So Trump has gotten over the can he win a general election hurdle, right, which is an important hurdle for a primary candidate. I think you have a couple of things going on. One, with Trump, it's not just celebrity has brought him into the field at 90% notoriety. It's also that it's made him a bit of Teflon because he is the – I mean, as much as New Republic called Marco Rubio the John Edwards of this campaign, and Jeb has called him the Barack Obama of this campaign, Marco Rubio is not the Rorschach ink blot in this campaign. Donald Trump is. And the second thing I would say for all these candidates, why all four of them could win the presidency, and I believe all four of them could, and I know this probably distinguishes me from my liberal friends, but the whole – the 10% in the middle that decide the elections, it masks something else that's going on, which is a lot of so-called independents are not really independents. I'm not a Republican because I hate the Democrats more, but I always vote for the Republican. I'm not a Democrat because I hate the Republicans more, so I always vote for the Democrat. Those aren't really independents. They're just unaffiliated left, center left, or unaffiliated center right. So here's what happens in the general election. The real challenge is the issue of negative partisanship. Who can best turn out their base as well as disaffected but philosophically affiliated voters? And I think, based on everything you've seen in the primary right now, you would have to say the candidate that is best poised to do that, Donald Trump.
Would you say – I want to just to follow up with that, and then I want to get everybody else's response. If you say that Trump and Carson are two of the four that you will have there, and you put a Cruz into that list – would you acknowledge that for those Trump supporters and for those Carson supporters, that Cruz would be their second choice if either of their favorites fades? And for Marco Rubio, he may be the first choice of obviously his supporters, but Marco Rubio might be the first or the second choice for supporters of Bush and Kasich.
Correct.
And Fiorina.
That's how I would say it breaks, right? So that's why Cruz is well positioned and Rubio is positioned to consolidate the establishment and maybe have still some appeal to some slice of the conservative
now
grassroots.
Now, Christine Svensson, let's talk about a subject you want to talk about, which is something I brought up on this program a couple of weeks ago, and that is the possibility of a brokered convention. Now, that night, everybody just totally dismissed that, but you see it differently.
Yes, I do. So I take a slightly different view with Dan on one thing. I don't think it's just down to the four candidates. I think there still could be a dark horse in there.
Like who?
A Kasich or perhaps a Christie. I'm not ruling one of them out. Okay. In particular, Kasich because of the Ohio thing, although the more I read about it, the more I'm realizing that there really is not much of an increased likelihood of gaining the presidency if you're from a specific state. Who knows? Anyway.
Schwarzenegger, by
even
the way,
though that's
jumped
such a
on
state.
That bandwagon. Schwarzenegger's going to be raise a lot of money for Kasich.
Okay. All right. So I wouldn't call – I don't think he's
John
dead
Huntsman's
yet.
Only because John Huntsman's not running.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't call him dead yet. We have a long way to go. So as far as the brokered convention thing goes, the RNC Rules Committee changed the rules in 2011 so that the nominee of the Republican Party has to have a majority of the electors in eight states, not five anymore. It used to be five, and it used to be just a plurality, and now it's a majority in eight states. That's a lot harder to do than you would think it would be. And so, because of that, it's really this inside. Like all the Republicans, RNC people are quote unquote freaking out because they see lots of different ways this can go, and it's not going to be easy even with four guys in the race to get eight states very quickly. So think about that. Think about how this plays out. Secondly, it is not winner take all. They also changed the rules on this until March 15th. So Illinois happens to be proportional, and it's on March 15th. For example, Florida is the first winner-take-all state of all around the country because it's also, you know, it's on March 15th.
Where Trump is leading at the moment.
Which is quite interesting that he's beating Rubio and Bush, to me. So
not so surprising, though, if you look at that state, you would think that maybe there would be a split.
Right.
So it opens up a lane for a Trump.
Fair enough.
And so Bush is still in the race on March 15th.
Right.
Which I don't think he's going to
be.
Yeah.
I don't think so either.
And then, of course, the super PACs, they've maintained their livelihood, and they can carry someone across the finish line like a Ted Cruz who has, you know, mega bucks in his super PAC. At least that's the word on the street.
A southern strategy.
Correct.
He's laying low for the first two states. He wants to come alive in South Carolina and run the tables in the South.
Right. And so keep this in mind. It is possible, and the Bush people are actually – this is their strategy. The Bush people know they're not going to get the first four states. And Kasich could do the same thing. So, again, that sort of just elongates this whole process. And so it makes someone like me – a delegate to the national convention, or sorry, a potential delegate, very excited because I could be a kingmaker.
There you go. Dave Lundy, look across the aisle and give us your assessment of what they have just said.
Well, I think it's particularly interesting in terms of that whole winner take all issue, mm-hmm. because if I'm looking ahead to the Republican nominating process, and come March 15th, you have a muddle, or maybe, you know, you've lost Jeb Bush and you've lost a few others. I don't really see the lane for Ted Cruz that is not currently being occupied by Donald Trump and Ben Carson. You really have three people on that side, three mm-hmm. people on the anti-establishment side of that
right.
aisle, and only one of your four that's an establishment. I totally disagree with you about John Kasich. He is the 2016 John Huntsman. And he's the candidate I fear the most. It's not Rubio. It's Kasich, because I think a Kasich Rubio ticket.
I would agree that
is the Republicans' best ticket to the White House, which is why I'm so relieved every time John Kasich tanks in these polls.
Let me ask
2%.
Let me ask the flip of that. Do you think a Rubio Kasich ticket would be equally strong?
I've thought of that. I think it would be strong. It's not as strong as a Kasich Rubio ticket.
I don't think Kasich could take it, but go ahead.
I don't think he could take being vice president. I don't think he would take it.
Either.
I also think that it would diminish Marco Rubio because of the age difference and the height difference. I just don't think it's...
How tall is Marco Rubio?
He's tiny.
He's short.
Yeah.
He's taller than Rahm Emanuel.
I'm taller than Rahm Emanuel. Are you kidding me?
He's taller than Rahm Emanuel. That's on the bumper sticker. 1-800-723-8029. We'll hear more from Mary when we come back, as well as for you, wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border, you can be the armchair political analyst this evening by giving us a buzz. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border, and now around the world on BeyondTheBeltway.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont, thanks very much for joining us tonight, 1-800-723-8029. We're going to talk about Paul Ryan in just a moment, but I want to finish up a conversation that we had during our commercial break at the top of the hour, and that was we were talking about Ben Carson, and the Democrats said, and I think they said in the first hour, they did not see a way in which Ben Carson could be elected. And I had said that, as you've heard me say for years, it's 10% of the population of the voting population that will really decide the election. And these are not necessarily the most astute political people, but their vote counts as much as anybody around this table this evening. And was there a way in which Ben Carson could get that 5.1% with his personality, his soft demeanor, maybe the fact that he is African-American could have some appeal to African-Americans who normally don't vote for a Republican candidate. And the Democrats both said you didn't think there was a path for Ben Carson. Dan, you seem to think in a general election against Hillary Clinton, there could be a path for Ben Carson.
Gee, I mean, could someone win the presidency with a compelling personal story that speaks well and appeals to non-traditional constituencies to their party? I don't know if that has that ever happened since 2012.
What about it, Christine?
Yeah, so no, Dan makes a good point. My issue with Ben Carson, I love his ideas, and I love, you know, the person and the policy and his personal story. But he gets up there, and I am I don't like the fact that he's not doesn't have an executive manner about him. He's not businesslike. He's not to the point. He's sort of pontificates and waffles about things. And I guess that has won for people before, like as you were just alluding to. But I don't see that playing so well in a general election. I don't think it plays. I don't think he's going to make it to the
look. I just want to make one quick point about this. I think you're going to lose Republicans. You're going to lose mainstream Republicans if you nominate a Ben Carson. I've talked to some fairly conservative Republican friends who want to remain nameless because they would never want to be caught saying this. But they've said to me, you know, I hate to say it, if it's Ben Carson and Hillary Clinton, I can't vote for Ben Carson.
Would they say the same thing about Donald Trump?
No.
Yep. See, I think Donald Trump's popularity now is undercounted. I think it's undercounted. I think in many circles, it's not fashionable to say that you might be for Donald Trump. And I think that he's being undercounted at the moment.
Well, and the other thing, too,
in a general election, I think he would be undercounted.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you know, because, the media is so gleeful to report that Trump is no longer leading in Iowa. He's leading in the other 49 states, and that's pretty good. And the other thing is all the intensity. This is not Giuliani from 2008. Giuliani wasn't putting 25,000 people in stadiums. This is more akin to what Obama was doing in 2008.
Right. I think also, by the way, back to something that Jeb Bush said in his interview with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press. He was talking about, you know, that he was out recently, and he said, just the other day I was in New Hampshire, he said, and there were 300 people there, and they were all
I couldn't
all
believe
really
he said that.
I couldn't believe that. 300 people.
Well, that was a personal best.
I saw that.
No, but
then he went on to say, and then I was at another event, and there were 500 people, and I'm sitting here going like, Are you paying any attention to what's going on in this campaign?
Wow.
Bernie Sanders has got 20,000. Donald Trump has 20,000. And you just bragged on national television that you have 300.
No,
I can get 300 people.
No,
some of them we didn't even have to pay.
Exactly. Yeah,
when I heard that, I said, "Oh my God, this guy is so out of sync." Let's go to line one. Redding, California is the place. Nice to hear from Northern California. Dale, go ahead.
Bruce?
Yes.
I work every Sunday to make sure I hear your program because I love how the interaction goes on.
Well, thank you very much. We really enjoy it, and it's always great to hear from Redding, California.
Yes, and I'm forcing myself to call you today because I do not want Hillary Clinton to win. And the only way she will not win is if Donald Trump is the running person for president of the United States because of popularity. The low-information voters will not listen to a wonderful man like Dr. Carson or Ted Cruz or even a – I even can't get away with the name right now. But anyway, you have to have Donald Trump run against Hillary. Otherwise, Hillary's going
to
win.
I stay on the line. I want to get everybody to respond to that, but because we've talked a little bit about it. But you used a term that I've heard used several times in the last several months, and that's low-information voters. I love that term. Uninformed voters.
They will vote for Hillary because the media makes her look so good and strong and just the right person to run our country, even though they don't understand one thing about her.
But Dale, would you acknowledge that low-information voters is an equal... There's an equal number, maybe not an equal number, but there's a large number of low-information voters. And by the way, I would say in that 10% that decides election, I would say the vast majority of them are low-information voters. But I believe there are low-information voters on the left. I believe they're on the right. And these are people who will hear a good soundbite and not necessarily follow through and believe that or demand from a candidate specificity as to how they're going to do it. And I
like
think
us.
Building a wall, by the way, I think building a wall in the southern border is one of those things that sounds good, and I've said this before, it sounds good. I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's a good idea. Now, again, the vast majority of the American people or those even listening to the show may think I'm all wet. I think that's an appeal to a low-information voter, in my opinion.
Well, and especially because we all know that these days the majority of people who are overstaying their visa or who are illegal come by air.
Well, they don't, 40%.
Yeah, well, the new ones, they're coming by air.
I mean, to your question, Bruce, and the caller's point, let's remember something about Hillary Clinton. If the Republican Party does it right, whoever their nominee is, this will be a referendum on Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
She's effectively the incumbent. And despite her good week and a half, 60% of the public, including whatever percentage that comprises of low-information voters, do not trust her. And it is very difficult to see how somebody gets a majority of the vote if the majority of the country says, I don't trust you. If you don't trust a person, then it doesn't matter what their policy positions are.
Yeah.
So Hillary has a long way to go. And I know the left is enjoying this Republican primary because there's so many people and it's easy to poke fun and have fun. But let's remember who the incumbent is here. It's Hillary.
Right. Dan Proft is right, and that's why Donald Trump is just the guy to get Hillary to a majority. Because Donald Trump is going to be less trustworthy than Hillary Clinton at the end of the day. You know, people always have to remember
because of what though? Tell me why.
You mean aside from the fact that he has far more flip flops than Hillary Clinton does, that he was this, he was that, that Donald Trump, whether it's, I can't say that word on the air, whether it's messing with people who buy condos from him, Trump University, all the various fraud and all the lawsuits against him. I got to tell you, they will come out of the woodwork to vote against Donald Trump. And I think that people always forget these, respectfully, Dan, these elections are not a referendum on one candidate. It's not a vote of no confidence in one candidate. It's a choice between two options. And if your two options are Donald Trump, the misogynist xenophobe, and Hillary Clinton, the untrustworthy candidate, I'm going to put my money on the untrustworthy candidate over the misogynist xenophobe.
I mean, I don't like a lot of the intemperate, tone-deaf comments Donald Trump has made on topics you've
referenced any more than you do. But I will tell you this. One of the things Victor Davis Hanson, National Review Online, I thought had a good observation. Here's what Donald Trump is doing that essentially insulates him from some of these criticisms and getting down into these some of what are kind of pedestrian issues, frankly, in terms of character and comments and particular business deals. He is saying all these people in the media and business and government, I know them all. I know all these ruling elite types, and they're even worse than you think. And
I like
I'm the
you.
Guy yeah. to tell hey. Them all to go to hell.
Yes.
I think you're right.
It's a great message.
Yeah, no, no, he is saying that. I
Mary,
agree with
what
you.
About it? You
it's
agree
a great
that?
Message, and it's true. So, I mean, you know.
Well, that, see, that, right that's, that. That's the appeal. I think the more, first of all, Trump is the one candidate who literally can completely change all the entire dynamic of a campaign by saying something at a press conference, or I mean, more so than anybody else, he can change on the dime. If he starts to be tanking, you know, in some of these other polls, you'll see him go out and say something which some people will be viewed as outrageous, and his poll numbers will go up, and then he'll attack the media, and his polls will go up again. And by the way, he hasn't really, other than saying that she's the worst Secretary of State in history, he really hasn't gone after Hillary Clinton. The person that's gone after Hillary Clinton the most was Marco Rubio last
Chris
week.
Chris Christie
and Fiorina.
And Chris Christie
and
Fiorina. Carly a lot. But, oh. but Rubio used the word liar in referring to her and referring to the testimony in Benghazi. And again, you know, that's not a term that's generally thrown around in a campaign by a major party candidate. Would you acknowledge that?
Oh, that word isn't normally used? Yes, that's right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So, and he called her a liar.
Well, if the word fits.
Well, I mean, Hillary called the Republicans like the biggest enemy she's ever faced. So
she
was,
did not say that.
Nice
her
try.
Tongue was firmly in her cheek when she said,
and,
when she was talking
and,
about
and
enemies.
And nobody has greater comedic timing than Hillary Clinton.
Hey, she was pretty good on Saturday Night Live. We'll see how the Donald does next week. No,
I will predict. I'm making a prediction. Next week's ratings on Saturday Night Live
will
be the biggest
huge.
In decades.
He's a ratings
they
machine.
Will be the biggest be. Ratings machine. In decades.
Yep.
Yes, because they will be huge. But look, there is a seriousness that eventually creeps into the electorate about a month before you actually have to vote for president.
Not amongst those 10%.
No, even amongst the 10%, you visualize
a
guy with his
days.
Finger on the button, and
can
nobody is going to want Donald
I'll
Trump's
tell you what,
finger.
Dale, back to you. He just said nobody wants Donald Trump's finger on the button. Respond.
Okay, this is what I got to say. Mr. Trump did not have to run for president unless he felt it was important for the country.
Or unless he felt it would help his brand and enhance the largest ego in the United States of America.
Yeah, we already
it's
know.
It's about power for him.
It's
about power for
that.
All of them.
Yeah.
It's about
yeah.
power for everyone. It's about power for where a lot of people can't handle the pinnacle that he's achieving.
All right, Dale, see, thanks very much. When we come back, we're going to talk about another big story. Oh, by the way, there's a new Speaker of the House. And he's probably within the listening distance of this station. Back shortly.
Getting ready
Chicago.
To watch the Packers.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let me introduce our guests. First, one of our Democrats is David Lundy. He is the president of Aileron Communications and a very articulate spokesman and a political analyst and commentator, and has become a regular guest on this program and also does one of the most interesting luncheons, the Lundy Lunch, the last Friday of every month at
Invite
Gina Giorgetti's. What?
Wow. Invite only.
Invite only. You can't. Everybody come.
Tough ticket.
Because it really is. It really is the most enjoyable lunch I have every month. It really is. Christine Svensson is also here. She is an attorney, and she is a Republican, and she joins us. Our Democratic attorney this evening is Mary Hartigan, who's been a guest on this program for many, many years, as well as Dan Proft, who's the morning host on AM 560, The Answer, along with Amy Jacobson, and again, a former candidate for governor of the great state of Illinois. Well, the other big story, by the way, we should have mentioned this a little bit earlier in the program, but again, a legendary figure of Tennessee politics died today, Fred Thompson, a Republican, a very popular Republican senator, actor from Law and Order and a lot of television shows, and again, who had a short-lived candidate for president a few years ago, but again, he passed away at age 73 today, so our condolences to many within the Tennessee Republican Party for having a very articulate member of the Senate for a couple of terms. Speaking of articulate spokespeople, let's talk about our new Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, a Republican from Janesville, Wisconsin, within our listening distance of this broadcast this evening. Maybe he's even listening because he's home with his kids, eating the Halloween candy from last night. Are you optimistic that he will be the right new image of the Republican Party at a time when maybe the party elders don't like necessarily what's happening with the primary voters as they select a president? They now have one of their guys, at least a perceived guy who dresses well, talks well, and is now one of the most powerful men in the country.
He also represents a new generation of leadership for the Republican Party, right? Somebody in their 40s as opposed to in their 60s, and that's important.
Yep.
So I think Paul Ryan is I disagree with some of the policy choices he made. I frankly was a little underwhelmed by his contribution as a vice presidential candidate,
yep, me too.
In 2012. But I think he is a serious policy guy. He's shown the political courage to take on entitlements and produce thoughtful documents, at least to drive a discussion about rethinking Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, the big drivers of the federal budget. And I think he is somebody that has generally respected within the caucus. And if he does what he said he would do at the outset, particularly in conversations with the Freedom Caucus, to allow people to have more input without kind of committing up front to any litmus tests, then I think you can have robust discussion within the caucus. You can allow opinions to bubble to the surface that may not represent the opinions of leadership. And I think he could end up being a very good speaker. Certainly the bar, as compared to the last couple of Republican speakers, is set pretty low.
Mary, even some Democrats have said some very nice things about him so far. Of course, it's only a couple of days since he's had the position. What's your opinion of Paul Ryan?
Well, if you really want the gold standard of majority leader and is Nancy Pelosi, and she has never lost a whip count that where she was seriously whipping. She had an agenda for the place. She brought her party along with him, and I don't think that he won't measure up.
You mean an effectiveness, not
correct.
Necessarily ideology. Just
correct.
She did lose the House, though.
Why did she
lose the House if she was such a great speaker?
She isn't
in charge of the DNC and how they ran the interim campaigns. You know, they didn't do a very good job.
Nancy Pelosi was a very effective speaker in terms of getting things done, managing the House. I don't agree with a lot of what Nancy Pelosi believes in, but she was very effective in that way. I think Paul Ryan is going to be very interesting because he said some things this morning on the chat shows. He said a couple of interesting things. One, he said, we fight over tactics because we don't have a vision. We've been too timid on policy. We've been too timid on vision. We have none. And he said various versions of that. But the other thing he said that I particularly enjoyed was that he said, Republicans have been too afraid to say what we really believe. I think we need to be much bolder, and we must tell people what we really believe. I think that is fantastic, because polling shows that if you do that, Republicans will lose.
Yeah, I don't think so, Dave, with all due respect. I mean, I think Paul Ryan is exactly right. The Republican brand is we're not President Obama. That was what it became under Boehner. And oh, by the way, so to those Republicans, including many in Illinois, who want to reauthorize the Export-Import Bank, what's the difference between the Export-Import Bank and Solyndra? There is no philosophical difference. And to the extent that Paul Ryan, who opposes the reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank, and good for him, just as a for example, to the extent he wants to drive those philosophical differences of opinion to say we're going to draw a bright line as a Republican Party against corporate cronyism, against the government putting its finger on the scale in a particular sector for a particular business, then that's good news. And here's the thing that Paul Ryan is looking at, because he is a forward thinker. Let's say we have a Republican in the White House in 2016, or, you know, takes office in 2017, and we still have Republican control of the House and the Senate. Well, we can't blame Barack Obama anymore. I know that Democrats like to do that with Bush, but we can't do that. We're going to have both branches. Then what do we do? And the then what do we do question has a lot of different answers right now. And I think he's trying to drive a conversation that gets to kind of a more cogent agenda to answer that question.
Right. So, I also think that the other thing that's out there is that when he says that he wants to have a clear message, it reminded me of the contract with America that Newt Gingrich talked about. And Newt Gingrich was articulate, and he had his game plan. And I think that's Paul Ryan was basically saying that's what they need again, because they were all over the map. They were not speaking for those. And again, he also said that to follow up on what you said, we've been too timid for too long. And then on a specific, he said, I don't think Planned Parenthood should get a red cent from the taxpayers. Now, that's pretty clear. Now, whether that...
I'm thrilled to hear that. I wasn't aware that he said that. I'm really, myself, thrilled with the choice. I understand that he has his, you know, I may not agree with him on every issue. But, wow, bold, bright, incredibly thoughtful. I mean, we have not seen that from someone on my side in Congress in a while. And to put him in a leadership position like that is the exact right thing to do after all that chaos that we just went through. It's interesting that he was the anti-establishment guy, and now he's quote-unquote establishment. Well, it's, by default, you're going to have to be establishment if you take that role. So let's see how he does. He's gonna have some bumps down the road, but he's young, and he's gonna take off with it.
Can I just say, there's one big distinction between Paul Ryan and John Boehner or Denny Hastert before him. Those two were Boehner and Hastert were mechanics. Ryan is a policy guy.
Thinker,
right?
And
right.
It's a big difference, and it's going to be a different house.
It's also interesting that, I mean, in a sense, he's willing to forego his dreams of becoming president of the United States. That has always been his goal. And
I'm not sure this foregoes his dreams.
I don't know about that.
I think it's going to be awfully difficult having a record and
well, again, there are people who are trying to get him into the race. I mean, let him be speaker. Let him be a great speaker. By the way, he also said that there's not going to be any immigration movement this year. He said the president tried to write the law himself. He would be it violated separation of powers. The president tried to go around Congress specifically on this issue. You cannot trust the president. So why would we want to pass legislation in this administration when the president, again, I don't trust. Again, I don't trust. So, again, here's an issue that this is one of those hot-button issues that's going to be pushed down the road again, which may have some benefit to Republicans as opposed to bringing it to an issue which is one of the things that Boehner wanted to do.
I think that Paul Ryan will have a brief honeymoon in the House, and I think that look, we'll see what happens when the rubber meets the road, when he has to take a policy position that he doesn't necessarily like or that the Freedom Caucus doesn't like, but that will he be able to corral this, what has seemed to be a fairly ungovernable group of folks?
As a media guy, though, would you acknowledge, and again,
he
did all five shows today.
He did the full Ginsburg?
He did the full Ginsburg. So the point is that he is, again, with everything that's going on in the Republican primary, he is the image of the Republican Party. He's articulate. He has a strong core. He's like you said, and he works from 6 in the morning to 11:30 at night. He still sleeps in his own office. He's going to continue to do that. He goes home with his kids to do trick-or-treating in Janesville, Wisconsin, flies back every weekend. He is really the quintessential, almost a Norman Rockwell-esque type of politician, a Jimmy Stewart-type politician.
He's a great image for the Republican
Party. But here, this speaks to Dan's point. It seems to me that what you have is you have Paul Ryan as the Speaker of the House. You may have Marco Rubio as the President of the United States. Now, that's one image. The other image is you have Hillary Clinton as President, and you have Nancy Pelosi as the leader of the Democrats in the House. Now, we live in the 21st century. That is a cultural shock on a generational basis. Would you acknowledge that, Mary?
Mean to have women run in?
No, not women. Not women.
Older women.
Senior women.
I don't really know. I mean, I think it's a big change, but I don't think that their being senior has anything to do with it.
You're talking about a generational shift.
I'm talking about the generational image.
And the Democrats have not.
Of the Republican Party versus what the Democrats have at the moment and have on their bench.
And here's
night and day.
You are absolutely correct. The elections of 2010 and 2014 decimated the Democratic bench. No question about it. I think that what Hillary Clinton will try to do, and probably do fairly effectively in the campaign, is say, yes, you're right. That person, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, whatever, is younger than I am. But his ideas are from the 1950s. And they will try to draw out the ideological, the policy. I mean, look, for Paul Ryan is a great spokesman for a set of policy principles, and I would like to see them debated. Actually debated what they really believe. Let's talk about the personhood
amendment. Back shortly from Chicago.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. I want to ask our Democrats a question, and then we're going to go to take another call. One thing that Hillary Clinton said this week was that she still supports the death penalty. Jeb Bush, on his appearance on Meet the Press today, said that he's conflicted by it. He thinks it's a tough decision, and certainly raised the possibility that he, maybe in his heart, because of his religious belief, maybe opposes it. He wasn't quite as emphatic, but he certainly was hinting around that. Does her position on capital punishment, which is sort of against the liberal orthodoxy of the party, could that hurt her in any way? America?
No, I don't think it will hurt her because it. For people for whom this is an issue, she's so good on a lot on her other issues, and everybody knows you can't have somebody who is completely aligned with you unless it's yourself. And for the people who are concerned about her, it for better or worse, it's people see that stance as a stance of strength, and it makes her look strong. I don't agree that being for the death penalty is a strong, but if you poll it, that's what comes out.
All right. Dave Lundy?
Yeah, well,
it's polled and it still is the majoritarian position. So
yeah, the majority,
it isn't necessarily
but a profile
of courage.
Democrats are opposed to yeah. capital punishment, mm-hmm. but it is I think that when you drill down a little deeper, it is more for the way it is enforced than it is in principle. Mm-hmm. And when she articulated in the Democratic debate that she wants it used more sparingly, she wants it used more carefully, she wants to work on making sure that there is more justice in how justice is administered. Frankly, I agree with that. I'm for capital punishment. I'm not for abolishing the death penalty, but I want it used far more restrictively and in a far less in a way that does not continually take itself out on black people.
I'll tell you what. Well, interestingly, I think it hurts her with the Black Lives Matter crowd,
yes,
which has taken over the Democrat primary. I mean, the pandering to those professional agitators has been striking. So that's number one in terms of where it hurts her. Number two, I think the statement that's the most troubling there is Jeb Bush's. He was a governor for two terms. He doesn't know where he stands on the death penalty.
No.
It's just bizarre. This is where, again, if you I'm a conservative and I oppose the death penalty. So if that's your position, then take
it
and articulate it, Jeb.
That's right.
Good grief.
Although he did say that it was a very that was always a very difficult for decision for him to make. But you're right.
He put
could
people
have gone to the
death.
Next step and taken a position
on it. He put people to death. I mean, it's not like he never had to consider this
before. That's one of the things you can do when you're a governor.
So I think Dan makes a good point about the Black Lives Matter issue. And ironically enough, as a conservative, I'm also opposed to the death penalty. But the reasons that I'm opposed are that I don't like the fact that these appeals go on forever and ever. It costs the state more to actually have these appeals go on
so
forever.
The only
you never have any
end. The death penalty is me.
No.
Wow.
I'm with you.
I'm for the death penalty too.
Hang them high.
Oh my God!
The Democrats are for the death penalty.
We're for the death penalty.
Tell you.
Don't
let these guys
see that coming.
It's also inconsistent to be pro-life and opposed to the death penalty, or I'm in favor of the death penalty.
Good Catholic over here.
That's good. Okay. Let's go to Sam in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to the call screener that I think that the Democrats, they really build up their candidates to the point where people can perceive them in ways next year that they don't perceive them now, and Republicans don't do that. The Republicans are busy defending their candidates, are busy counteracting attacks, and the Democrats really rally amongst one another to elevate whatever candidate is, and that candidate is going to be Hillary Clinton. You know, she will not be hurt by her stance on the death penalty because mm-hmm. she will be elevated at that point.
She'll be elevated, and she'll be forgiven for her position. Just as there are Republicans that will forgive, you know, their front runner on positions because they think that they can get elected, and clearly she seems to be locked into the nomination at this moment in time.
Yeah, and the Democrats do a lot better job of sort of glorifying the cause because their cause is for the small people, and it's much easier to glorify that cause than for the Republicans to say, "Hey, look, it ain't pretty, but I'm going to tell you like it is." You can't really glorify that, you know.
Well, I think
it's all about image nowadays.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things you said that are true. One is Republicans too often fighting rearguard actions rather than being on offense, and I think that there again lies the appeal of Trump and to a lesser extent Carson and Cruz, is that those are individuals that are always on offense, always turning issues back on the Democrats mm-hmm. or the media, and I repeat myself.
I think
I agree.
A prediction, then we're going to go to the next call. I think a prediction I made, obviously, I made the prediction about Donald Trump. Huge ratings next week when he hosts Saturday Night Live. That's one of the things we'll be talking about next week, as well as I'm sure every around every political water cooler in America. But I think the next issue where Donald Trump may say something that will either inflame or inspire a constituency and may surprise people with his position may be in the criminal justice area. I think that could happen. David, listening to us in San Francisco on the internet, go ahead.
Hey, greetings. You know, I as a historian, I've noticed that in the past, say 100 years ago or so, the wealthy people of a given town were actually proud to pay taxes, and they would virtually show off how much they had given to the university or how much they had given to the school system or how much they had invested in the local sewer bond issue.
15 seconds, Dave. Go ahead.
So nowadays when we see the split in the Republican Party, it's based on the idea that nobody wants to repair America anymore. They just want to cash out.
Okay, well, Donald Trump wants to make it better, make America great again.
Speaking
on that note, David, we are out of time. Our thanks to Christine Svensson and Dan Proft. They have been our Republicans. Our Democrats have been Mary Hartigan and David Lundy. We thank you all for joining us tonight. Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman and Dan Dorfman made this program possible in association with with WCGO AM 1590. I'm Bruce Dumont. Until next week, good night from Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.